Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, September 6th, 2020. I'm reading these articles on Thursday, September 10th, and I'll begin with the most recent articles. The latest update on COVID-19 testing in San Angelo, Tom Green County. September 10th, City of San Angelo. 3,384 positive cases reported. 10 new positive cases. 22 currently hospitalized. 65 deaths. 46 Tom Green County residents. 19 out-of-county residents. 605 active cases. San Angelo High School cancels homecoming pep rally due to stormy skies, by Elena Edgen. After a downpour soaked San Angelo Wednesday, Lakeview High School announced it was canceling their homecoming pep rally, according to a school Facebook post. Minutes before 5 p.m. Wednesday, September 9th, Lakeview High School announced the Thursday homecoming pep rally was canceled. The cancellation was made due to saturated grounds around the Lakeview Stadium, limited capacity in the gym, and incoming rain chances, according to the post. The homecoming game against Sweetwater, scheduled for 7 p.m. Friday, is still on. Previously, Sweetwater had canceled the game due to COVID-19. On September 5th, Sweetwater announced they were ready to play Lakeview. The following articles I'm reading were published Wednesday, September 9th. San Angelo rainfall surpasses monthly average, could see more throughout week. San Angelo surpassed the September average for rainfall within 24 hours, according to the National Weather Service. In less than 24 hours, San Angelo received 3.5 inches of rain from a widespread storm by 1:15 p.m., Wednesday, September 9th. This surpassed the September average of just over 2 inches, according to Mark Cunningham, National Weather Service meteorologist. It's a little unusual to get this kind of a strong front this early in September, Cunningham said. The cold temperatures, around 52 degrees, is also somewhat unusual. October is more of a wet month for us than September. With Wednesday's rainfall adding 3.54 inches as of 2:45 p.m., the year-to-date rainfall rests at 17.12 inches. In 2019, San Angelo received 17.73 inches. The yearly average is 21.25 inches, according to the National Weather Service. The rain also brought advisories for Wednesday as some roads flooded. We've got more rain coming, so our main concern could be flooded roads, he said. Those low water crossings probably need to be watched through tonight. Cunningham predicted the rain should bring lake levels up in the coming days for Twin Buttes and possibly O.C. Fisher. Water utilities reported the lake levels have decreased during the past month, except for Lake Nasworthy, according to department reports. As of September 8th, Lake Nasworthy has 8,888 acre-feet, 88% full. O.C. Fisher, 7,918 acre-feet, 7% full. O.H. Ivy, 350,400 acre-feet, 63% full. Twin Buttes, 99,687 acre-feet, 55% full. E.V. Spence, 118,200 acre-feet, 23% full. The county also ended the burn ban Wednesday morning after the downpour. National Recovery Month, How a San Angelo Nonprofit Helps Substance Abusers Recover, by Elena Edgen. September is National Recovery Month, a celebration for those recovering from substance. One nonprofit and their staff are celebrating their own recoveries and success for its 60th anniversary. The Alcohol and Drug Abuse Council of the Concho Valley is a nonprofit that provides treatment, prevention, outpatient, residential, and recovery services for substance abuse disorders in all ages. People who are insured or not insured can use the program, and services are confidential. They're for the entire community, because it takes an entire community to really have an effective prevention program against substance use and substance use disorders, said Eric Sanchez, CEO of the nonprofit for 20 years. Over the course of 2020, the nonprofit has powered through the pandemic to continue helping substance abusers recover. If you need us, we're here, said Paulette Schell, Public Information Officer and Director of Program Development. If you don't need us, keep our number anyway, because you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who doesn't know a person with drug and alcohol issues. How to get help and what to expect. People can walk into the center at 3553 West Houston Heart Expressway or call the nonprofit at 325-224-3481. The 24-hour crisis line can be reached at 800-880-9641. Calls about family or friends are acceptable. Usually they contact us when it's out of control and they're really suffering with their addictions and their substance use disorders, Sanchez said. They call us with tears in their eyes. They've exhausted every other resource they know of and just don't know where to turn, where to get the help they need. The staff will screen people and determine what treatment is needed. If residential care is needed, the nonprofit will find a bed and space. Even after treatment, clients continue with participation in programs, such as a 12-step program or Alcoholics Anonymous. The nonprofit's MEN program has a 60% successful completion rate and an 81% success rate in the women's program. One of those successes is Patrick Box, a staff member with the nonprofit. Staff speaks from experience with addiction and recovery. Box's addiction started at high school and accelerated in 2007 when he took opiates, which later progressed to heroin. Around a year later, I realized it was getting out of hand, Box said. I realized I needed to separate myself from certain people. I realized what my lifestyle did to others around me. Box tried treatment in 2009 and continued to struggle. By 2014, Box found himself in the nonprofit's care. I struggled considerably before I was admitted here, he said. People struggling aren't bad people. They're sick and should be given every opportunity to recover, just like people who are sick. Box, now 5 years sober, joined the program as a staff member around early August 2020. When asked why he wanted to help others recover, he said he wanted to return the favor. I never would have gotten well without someone doing it for me, Box said. If you need help, reach out to somebody. Pick up the phone and make the call. There's a stigma around getting treatment and the people who need it, according to Schell. They're thought of as those people, the ones causing all the crime, not taking care of the children, can't keep a job, Schell said. But in reality, they aren't those people. They are the people you encounter every day at church, the bank. Drug and alcohol addiction is pervasive. It doesn't matter what race or gender or how much money you have. Schell encouraged the community to help and not judge and be supportive of recovery. In addition to the nonprofit's continued efforts, they have opened the Journey Recovery Center and plan to start a detox program in the fall. Growth during a pandemic. When March began, the nonprofit made the move to their new building, the Journey Recovery Center. The center will allow them 72 beds, more than doubling their former 28 beds. Just as the nonprofit moved in, COVID-19 swept through Texas. Of course, we picked the month of March 2020 to move in, and COVID was right on us, Sanchez said. We keep telling our community members and our partners around the state that just because COVID-19 has hit the addiction and substance use disorders have not stopped. Calls continued, and the nonprofit expanded with a new building, a detox program, and added about 15 staff members. During this COVID challenge, a lot of programs have slowed down. A lot of businesses have slowed down. Ours has grown, Sanchez said. It hasn't slowed us down. We are here. Please contact us if we can be of service to you. The upcoming detox program will relieve some obstacles for treatment in San Angelo. Before this, people in need of detox might have to go several hours out of the area. If they have to wait for a detox bed, that usually means that we won't hear from them again, Sanchez said. They go back to their addiction. We've really struggled with that, so we're very blessed to say, just come into our detox program. In the previous fiscal year, the nonprofit helped over 400 people. Shell believes they will help even more this fiscal year, which began on September 1st. Boil water notice lifted for Southwest San Angelo. Here's what you should know, by Elena Edgen. The boil water notice has been lifted as of 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 9th, according to a city release. Here's the earlier story. A boil water notice was issued Tuesday morning for Southwest San Angelo after a water main broke, according to a city news release. Around 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, the city reported a boil water notice for Southwest San Angelo, which includes the Bentwood and Lake Nasworthy neighborhoods. The notice was given after a water main break in the area resulted in low water pressure, according to the release. The water main burst on Valley View Boulevard, just north of Lake Nasworthy, and the city announced Tuesday afternoon the pipe was fixed, but the boil water notice would remain in effect. Crews are flushing hydrants in the affected area, and they will also begin sampling the system in the boil water notice area, a statement from the city said. Once results are back, the city will work toward lifting the boil water notice. People in the area must boil their water before consumption, which includes brushing teeth and washing hands and face, according to the release. Water should be brought to a rolling boil, then boiled for 2 minutes so it is safe to use. Again, that was the earlier story. The updated part of this article says that the boil water notice was lifted as of 11 a.m. Wednesday. Affidavit states Carlsbad man turns self in, reports years of child sexual indecency, by Elena Edgen. A 67-year-old Carlsbad man has been arrested after making a voluntary confession to being sexually indecent with a child multiple times, according to an arrest affidavit obtained Tuesday. On Sunday, September 6th, a man contacted Tom Green County deputies and made a voluntary confession to making sexual contact with a child younger than 17 years old, according to the affidavit. The man told deputies the sexual contact occurred on multiple occasions over the past 4 to 5 years in a Carlsbad residence and Oklahoma, records state. The child made an outcry Saturday, September 5th, to a woman who then confronted the man, according to court documents. Joe Landrum Grooms, 67, was arrested Sunday on suspicion of indecency with a child by sexual contact. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $35,000 bond as of 9:15 a.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. The following articles were published Monday, September 7th. Pier 1 Imports in San Angelo announces closing date, by Rosanna Aguilera. Pier 1 Imports in San Angelo has announced its final day, months after the company revealed all stores would close. The San Angelo location's last day will be September 23rd. A customer service representative said stores across the country have until September 27th to close, but many are closing earlier. On May 19th, the company filed a motion to begin an orderly wind down of the operations as soon as reasonably possible, after stores are able to reopen following the COVID-19 closures. As part of the wind down, P1 Pier 1 will sell its inventory and assets, including its intellectual property and e-commerce business, according to the release. Store closings and liquidation sales began as stores reopened in compliance with CDC guidelines. We deeply value our associates, customers, business partners, and the communities in which we operate, and this is not the outcome we expected or hoped to achieve, Robert Rizbeck, Pier 1 CEO, said. This decision follows months of working to identify a buyer who would continue to operate our business going forward. Unfortunately, the challenging retail environment has been significantly compounded by the profound impact of COVID-19, hindering our ability to secure such a buyer and requiring us to wind down. The release states the financial and legal advisors shuffled through options before deciding on this course of action. Ultimately, due to the combination of a challenging retail environment and the new reality and uncertainty of a post-COVID world, the company and its advisors determined that an orderly wind down is the best way to maximize the value of Pier 1's assets, according to the release. Police find another body in the Concho River, second drowning, same area, in less than a week. By Rosanna Aguilera, Colin Murphy, John Tufts, and Elena Edgen. Less than a week after San Angelo police pulled the body of a deceased man out of the Concho River, officials responded to a second person they suspect drowned Friday in the same area. Police said they were not releasing the person's identity or other details about the deceased, pending notification of next of kin. At about 1:30 p.m. September 4th, police were called to the 300 block of South Oak Street, opposite the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts. As many as three police officers could be observed at that time walking along the banks of the Concho River, one person with the words "crime scene" written on the back of their shirt. Around 2:15 p.m., first responders flew a drone low over the water near the Johnson Dam by the South Oak Street Bridge. 30 minutes later, police radio communications requested a boat called to the scene. A spokesperson with the San Angelo Police Department said the investigation is ongoing and that police are investigating an unattended death they suspect was a drowning. Officials said there was no connection between the person who was found deceased Friday and a man police found drowned last week. This article was published in the September 9th edition of the Standard Times. 9th Annual Fall Landscape Symposium on September 12th by Susan Stanfield. The Concho Valley Master Gardeners in San Angelo are presenting the annual Fall Landscaping Symposium. This year, it's going to be presented a little different. The speakers will be presented online on Saturday, September 12th from 9 a.m. until noon. This year's symposium will be free to join online. As in the past events, the CVMG have invited specialists in their fields who aim to help everyone, from beginners to experienced gardeners, get good information to improve their gardening techniques and practices. Participants must pre-register online at txmg.org/Concho Valley. Deadline to register is Friday, September 11th. Three speakers who are tops in their fields will be presenting throughout the online symposium this year. Robert Skip Richter, Organic Practices That Work. Skip received his master's degree in horticulture from Texas A&M University and has been with the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service for 30 years in Montgomery, Travis, and Harris County, where he currently serves as a county extension agent in horticulture. Skip has gardened in the brush country of South Texas, the rocky hills of the Missouri Ozarks, the acid sands of the East Texas piney woods, the semi-arid climate and high pH soils of Central Texas, and the humid, hot climate and black clays of Southeast Texas. He helped develop Extension's Don't Bag It Yard Waste recycling programs, the Composting for Kids educational webpage,
and the Grow Green Environmental Education Program, which educates Austin residents on landscaping practices that protect water quality. Skip is a popular speaker, and he has written a biweekly internet column for the National Gardening Association and numerous newspaper and magazine articles on gardening. His Gardening with Skip YouTube channel features over 120 brief gardening videos. Skip has served as the National Gardening Association's regional horticulturalist for the southeastern U.S. and is a contributing editor to Texas Gardener magazine. He is the host of the Gardening Success radio show in College Station, which is also available by podcast online. His book, Texas Month by Month Gardening, provides guidance on planting and caring for your garden and landscape every month of the year. Vikram Baliza, Multipurpose Landscape Design. Vikram was named the AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Lubbock County in 2014. The main focus of his position is the development of urban water conservation strategies for Lubbock County. Vikram earned a master's degree in horticulture from Texas Tech University, where his major concentration was fruit crop production. He also holds a bachelor's degree in horticulture from Texas A&M University with an emphasis on landscape design. He operated a landscape design, installation, and maintenance firm in Lubbock. In addition, he has been active in several youth and adult horticulture and outreach educational events in the Lubbock community. Tim Hartman, Fruit Production for the Home Landscape. Tim received his bachelor's and master's degrees in horticulture and plant breeding from Texas A&M University. He has served as a program specialist for the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service in College Station since 2014. He focuses on landscape water conservation, but is also heavily involved with fruit crops, particularly those that require low input. Tim received his PhD in horticulture from Texas A&M in May of this year. He completed a project focused on the feasibility of golden kiwi fruit production in Texas. He is also doing research on Pheola pineapple guava as an alternative fruit crop for Texas homeowners. The Concho Valley Master Gardeners are excited to bring their special online 2020 Fall Symposium and hope you will join them Saturday, September 12th from 9 a.m. until noon. A reminder, you still need to register by going to txmg.org/Concho Valley. This seminar is free and open to anyone who registers in advance. For questions or more information, contact Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service, Tom Green County, at 325-659-6522. This article was a front-page story in the San Angelo Standard Times published Monday. Numerous Upgrades Scheduled for Lake Nasworthy, by Carl White, City of San Angelo. Much-needed improvements are coming to the parks at Lake Nasworthy. One notable project is underway and will near completion early this fall. Previously, and with City Council direction, we applied for a boating access grant with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and were successful, securing $500 in funding. Matching these funds with approved city funds, we are now in the process of constructing a new 60-foot-wide boat ramp, new dock, new lighted parking area, and new restrooms with showers on a new sewer line at Middle Concho Park. The ramp serves several boating events at the lake, as well as everyday use by boaters and campers. With these improvements, it will likely become one of the most popular ramps at the lake, especially with the new shower-equipped restrooms. For those unfamiliar with where Middle Concho Park is, head south on Knickerbocker Road, turn right at Red Bluff Road. Follow it as it winds around for about 2.5 miles and turns into Middle Concho Drive, and it will be at the end of that road. Fingers crossed, these improvements will be fully available to us all later in October. Following these improvements will be a series of other ones funded by the special election that was held November 5th, 2019. Successful passing of this referendum allocated $6 million for lake and river improvements to enhance water recreation, projects now being conceptualized in schematics. Repairs and work at six existing boat ramps, Knickerbocker Park, South Concho Park, Mary E. Lee Park, Karen Abbott Park on Beatty Road, Fisherman's Road, and Red Bluff Road. Replacement of the existing old, unusable fishing pier with the addition of a covered area at the end to be used for small public or private events. Some shoreline and erosion control work and beach improvements. As far as timing, we hope to implement all within the next 3 to 5 years, with the pier replacement being the next project to be tackled after the completion of the Middle Concho Park improvements. Lake Nasworthy and its parks remain a regional draw for outdoor recreation. Many opportunities exist: swimming, boating, skiing, fishing, kayaking, bird and nature watching, photography, camping, biking, running, walking, archery, relaxing, event going, and more. Water dogs at Mary E. Lee Park offer boat rentals and more. Spring Creek Marina offers RV and tent camping. The Tule Princess offers a unique experience to ride in a side-wheel paddle boat and more. The Nature Center offers close-up views of regional animals. These improvements, ongoing and upcoming, will better enhance these activities for us all. The article we're reading next was published on the front page of Sunday, September 6th, San Angelo Standard Times. Wasted Farmland. Texas lost fewer acres to spring storms and floods in 2020. By Camille McManus, USA Today Network. Floods and heavy rainfall prevented U.S. farmers from planting a record 19.6 million acres of crops last year. This spring, growers in most states got a break. Still, new numbers in the U.S. Department of Agriculture released this week showed that about 9.3 million acres in the nation's crop insurance program, mostly corn and soybeans, went unplanted this year. That's the third most acres since the department began keeping records in 2007. Unlike in 2019, when the biggest damage was spread through a dozen Midwestern states, three states, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Arkansas, accounted for about half the unplanted acres this year. In Texas, weather prevented farmers from planting 400,500 acres this year, down 54% from 2019. That number includes 214,548 acres of corn and 121,180 acres of wheat. Hardest hit this year was Lamar County, where 40,202 acres went unplanted, 10.3% of the acres there. Andy Clay was among the farmers who had a much better spring this year. Clay, a seventh-generation farmer from Jamestown, Missouri, lost about 2,000 acres, half of his row crops, last year because of flooding from the Missouri River. This year, he's left just 36 acres unplanted. Nationwide, weather hit corn, soybean, and wheat fields the most this year, the same crops most affected in 2019. Although many states saw an overall improvement in crop yield this year, a few states actually had more acres go unplanted due to weather than last year. The 2.7 million acres North Dakota farmers reported they were unable to plant is about three times what they reported last year. That jump in unplanted acres can be attributed to a snowy winter and heavy rainfall in the spring that delayed harvesting and planting crops, said Pete Hannabut, director of public policy for the North Dakota Farm Bureau. This is a business that is weather dependent and sometimes the weather works against you, he said. In Ohio, more than 15% of the state's farmland, nearly 1.5 million acres, went unplanted in 2019, the highest percentage of any state. This year, better weather meant farmers there left many fewer acres unplanted. We had significant periods of dry and almost perfect weather to get these crops in during the spring, said Ben Brown, an assistant professor of agricultural risk management at Ohio State University. April and May, we were really moving along well in terms of planting progress, especially in the northwest part of the state where we had significant prevent plant acreage the year before. Doug Goings, a farmer in northwest Ohio, agreed that it had been a much easier year for his area. Last year, farmers couldn't plant nearly a third of the farmland in Paulding County, where Goings farms. But this year, they reported no unplanted acres there. Even though his crops are doing well so far this year, Goings said it's been a little dry in his area recently. He said a few of his crops need rain soon to keep them growing. August rains are very important for soybeans, and that's what we're needing real bad right now. Other parts of the state, however, had the opposite problem, Brown said. In western and southern Ohio, there were areas that rained through the spring and made it harder to plant. Despite the overall improvement in crop yield this year, many farms are still recovering from last year's revenue loss, said Scott Vanderwall, president of the South Dakota Farm Bureau and vice president of the American Farm Bureau. Many farms could still be below the break-even point this year. That's something that takes a long time to heal up from, he said. Weather prevented South Dakota farmers from planting nearly 4 million acres in 2019, the most of any state. The 1.2 million acres that couldn't be planted this year still made South Dakota the second hardest hit state in the country. Even though more farmers were able to plant their crops this year, they may have run into other problems because of COVID-19. Vanderwall said markets have gone flat since the pandemic began. People were looking for a chance to make a little money, and then all of a sudden, the coronavirus came along, he said. The markets went absolutely backwards, and since then, haven't recovered yet. It's just like any other industry, Clay said. There's a lot of unknowns here. This article was published in the inside pages of the Standard Times on Saturday, September 5th. City of San Angelo video wins in national contest by Rosanna Aguilera. A City of San Angelo promotional video won first place in a national competition recently, according to a news release. The video, Greetings from San Angelo, Texas, was posted on YouTube on October 8, 2019, and premiered at last year's State of the City address. The creation won first place in the promotion of a city-county category at the annual Government Programming Awards competition for the National Association of Telecommunications Officers of America. The script was written by Laura Lee Day, City Communications Coordinator, and voiced over by Aubrey Groves, daughter of City Public Information Officer Brian Groves. Aerial photography was done by A.J. Deerdorf, City Network Engineer. Additional footage was provided by Angelo State University, by The Stream Media, and Cover One. The GPAs are annual awards that recognize excellence in broadcast, cable, multimedia, and electronic programming produced by local government agencies, according to the release. Categories cover a variety of programming, including community events, documentaries, public affairs, and public service. The video highlights footage of some of the city's staple gems, activities, and events, such as downtown San Angelo, Lake Nasworthy, the annual Stock Show and Rodeo, Angelo State University, Central and Lakeview football games, and more. The scenes play as an 8-year-old Aubrey Groves voices over a lighthearted poem about all that our city has to offer, the release stated. The end result is a video that captures the essence of San Angelo, a unique, hospitable, and family-friendly West Texas town. Here's an article that was published September 4th. Pathways to Progress. COVID-19 has taken economic toll on thousands of San Angelo families. By Kenneth L. Stewart, Pathways to Progress. Just over 2 weeks have passed since our local schools began to feel their way through the 2020-2021 school year. Usually excited by aspiration, many families with children approached this year's opening of school with a complex of worries and fears tied to a raging pandemic and a significantly shuttered economy. The Household Pulse Surveys. Concerns surrounding the opening of school prompted me to explore the patterns of disruption that local families with children have been going through since the onset of the pandemic. To be sure, data for this purpose is difficult to find. Personal interviews and stories provide heart-rending glimpses of hardships experienced by individual families, and public records reveal various trends about virus infections, unemployment, consumption patterns, and utilization of health and social services. Short of conducting our own surveys, however, there are scant opportunities to tabulate experiences as reported by family members themselves. The best foundation for extrapolating estimates about the impacts of COVID on local families with children is offered by the Census Bureau's weekly Household Pulse Surveys, HPS. Three features of HPS data qualify it as the best source for this purpose. The first is that HPS includes results from a series of 12 weekly surveys beginning April 23rd and ending on July 21st of this year. This feature gives an advantage over a one-shot survey that would yield only a static picture at a single point in time. The HPS time series provides a dynamic picture of the changing circumstances of families with children as the pandemic unfolded during the spring and summer of this year. The geographic coverage of the HPS is a second advantage. National surveys typically include 1,000 to 3,000 carefully selected respondents to represent the nation. The Census Bureau's HPS series, on the other hand, includes robust samples for each state. Thus, an average of 4,681 adult Texans responded to the 12 weekly HPS questionnaires. An average of 3,354 weekly respondents were residents of the state's two largest urban areas around Houston and Dallas-Fort Worth. The remaining 1,327 respondents lived in other parts of Texas. Finally, using HPS provides weighting of survey results. Generalizing surveys to extrapolate local estimates about the impact of COVID requires proper weighting to match known distributions of population and household characteristics. For instance, if a single parent reports that a child attended a virtual school, that answer should be weighted to reflect the distribution of different family types when we estimate the total child population attending virtual schools. Since the Census Bureau stores the nation's most complete information on the characteristics of individuals and households, its methods of weighing survey results are among the best available. Estimating the effects of COVID-19 on local families with children. Unfortunately, HPS data does not include a sufficient number of Tom Green County's respondents to provide a foundation for estimating the impacts of COVID solely on answers from local residents. Consequently, I developed two sets of estimates using HPS data for Texas. The first set assumes the impacts of COVID on local families with children are essentially like the effects elsewhere across the state. Thus, I computed a set of estimates that apply HPS findings for Texas overall to the local community. A second approach assumes the impacts of COVID have been different for Texas families with children living outside the state's two major urban areas around DFW and Houston. Following this assumption, I computed a second set of estimates for Tom Green County using only the HPS respondents who live outside the Metroplex areas. Of course, a set of low and high estimates about impacts of COVID on local families resulted from this process. The procedure, assuming the impacts of COVID were essentially the same across the state, produced some of the low estimates. For instance, this assumption led to the low estimate that an average of 5,913, or 44.7% of households with children, delayed medical care during the spring and summer because of COVID. However, the same assumption also produced the high estimate that 6,296, or 47.6% of local households, lost jobs or earned income during the spring and summer this year. Similarly, the assumption that COVID had different impacts outside the Metroplex areas produced some low and some high estimates of the pandemic impacts on local families. Pandemic impacts on local families with children. The HPS data suggests that the resilience of approximately 13,235 families with children in Tom Green County has been tested by pandemic impacts over the recent weeks. Based on the data, I estimate that a weekly average of 5,998 to 6,296 local households with children lost jobs or earned income during the spring and summer months. When the livelihood of 45.3% to 47.6% of local families with children is diminished, their capacity to flourish is undermined. Indeed, other estimates based on HPS indicate the damage. My calculations indicate that an average of more than 2,400 local households with children could not afford needed food over the weeks between April 23rd and July 21st. Another estimate suggests the number of households unable to meet the most recent mortgage or rent payment averaged between 2,169 and 2,304. According to these approximations, at least 5 or 6 out of every 100 families with children could not meet basic housing or nutrition needs as COVID ravaged our health and economic activity during the summer of 2020. Other estimates rooted in HPS suggest that support programs and social services fell short of filling the gaps for households and children as they plunged into hard times. My calculations suggest that a weekly average of about 18% of children's households did not have the means to buy food, but only 10.9% to 12.3% received free food from service agencies or programs. Also, my estimation is that 85.2% to 86.5% of a weekly average of more than 2,000 workers in children's households who reported no work over the most recent week did not receive any unemployment or other pay for lost work time. Finally, the pandemic created obstacles to medical care. The HPS data leads me to estimate that as many as 5,913 to 6,219 Tom Green County households where children live had delays of medical service during the spring and summer because of COVID. Going back to school. COVID-19 infections were starting to spin out of control in Tom Green County when Governor Greg Abbott notified Texas legislators on June 18th that Texas schools would reopen for in-person classes this fall. On the same day, the San Angelo Health Department reported 223 cumulative COVID cases and one related death. Understandably, Abbott's decision sparked serious concern among families, students, teachers, school staff, and school district leaders across the state. Consequently, the Texas Education Agency provided more flexible guidelines and a variety of waiver opportunities for districts to schedule the opening of school and offer mixtures of in-person and remote online instruction. In the wake of guidance, San Angelo ISD started the school year by offering families and children a choice between in-person instruction and the district's virtual academy, with options to change at the end of each 9-week grading period. Still, since Abbott's reopening notice in June, Tom Green County's outbreak has climbed a ladder that increased the case count by more than 14-fold to 3,183 confirmed infections as of August 28. That total included 418 infections contracted by children under age 20, and 40 Tom Green County residents were dead from COVID-related causes by August 28. SAISD reported 4 cases involving 3 staff members and 1 student between August 24th and 30th. More ominously, ASU reported 42 cases among 29 students and 13 staff members over its first 2 weeks after starting classes on August 17th. Overall, the COVID testing positivity rates for Tom Green County, 12.7%, and the state, 12.2%, at the end of August, are warning signals that the spread of the virus remains out of control in both the local community and Texas as a whole. Indeed, unknown details about the future impacts of the virus on children and families are reasons why epidemiologist Catherine Troisi at the UT School of Public Health in Houston called this fall's opening of schools a big experiment during a late August interview with the Texas Tribune. The push by state leaders to reopen schools in a way that collects large numbers of students and school personnel into classrooms is a big risk indeed, and the greatest risk falls on those families with children that have been battered most by hard times during the spring and summer months of 2020. Now here's the weekly column from Allison Watkins, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Summer heat makes fall the best time to plant. It's been a hot, dry summer that has been rough on many plants. The fact that summer is harsh is the reason fall is the best time of year to plant trees and shrubs. They have more time to establish a good root system before summer comes. Fall is also the best time to plant spring bulbs and wildflowers and cool season vegetables. So now through November is a busy time for planting in the landscape and garden. Visit the website tomgreen.agrilife.org/horticulture to see a vegetable planting chart that shows what to plant and when, as well as a list of recommended trees and shrubs. Trees and shrubs are the most permanent plants of the landscape, so take time to carefully choose and plan what to plant. Then use good design principles to place in the right location and best planting techniques to get a successful result. Plant large shade trees at 45-degree angles off the front corners of the home, so they frame the home and highlight it, not in front of the home to block it and/or visually chop it in half. Plant large shrubs at the corners and smaller dwarf shrubs closer to the front door. Think of a gradual decrease in plant height toward the middle of the home, where the front entry is. This makes it inviting and approachable. Choose dwarf shrubs for the front of the home that grow to the appropriate size at their mature age so that regular shearing and pruning is not necessary. Planting depth is very important for woody plants. Don't dig the holes deeper than the root ball. Large, heavy trees can even be planted a couple inches above grade to allow for settling. Don't stake trees unless absolutely necessary. Trees develop strength when moving in the wind. Staking can slow down that process. Amend soil with compost when planting shrubs, but not trees. Shade trees have large, extensive root systems that must be adapted to the native soil. It's impossible to amend all the soil the roots will occupy. But planting beds where shrubs, perennials, annuals, and ground covers will grow should be tilled up and amended with good quality plant-based compost. Organic matter in the soil will improve plant performance and reduce the need for fertilizer. Finish off with a 3 to 4 inch deep layer of wood mulch. Research has shown that mulch can help woody plants grow bigger, faster. It helps keep weed competition at bay, moderates soil temperature, prevents evaporation, etc. Always water new plants in immediately after planting, and hand water for the first few weeks. Don't rely on automatic irrigation until they begin to establish. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu. Before I read the next feature, Rick Smith was a popular San Angelo columnist for the San Angelo Standard Times for many, many years. This feature references Rick Smith, so keep that in mind as we read the story. Rick Smith, buried treasure awaits historians at a lost beach. By Eric Smith, PSAT, published July 7th, 2016. San Angelo's John F. Vaughn is retired now, but he was the director of Fort Concho National Historic Landmark for years. He is now a historian who knows West Texas and a place called Rankin Beach. Not too long ago, John wrote an interesting story of the long-gone treasure for the 2015 Permian Historical Annual. John allowed me to use his story of Rankin Beach, called Rankin's Beach by some. John said, "In the sweet spot of the great West Texas oil boom of the 1920s, it was fashionable to take an Orient Railway tourist train out to Upton County to a playground called Rankin Beach. Rankin Beach was the dream of Ira G. Yates, a merchant in Rankin who traded his business for a ranch in contiguous Pecos County, which turned out to be the multi-billion dollar oil-producing Yates Field. Returning to Rankin as a wealthy man, Yates wanted to put his old hometown on the map and built a three-story Yates Hotel with fine furnishing and fireproof construction. It became a busy stop for travelers in West Texas. The hotel was exceptional for its locale, but not enough to make Rankin a world-famous spa. Rankin Beach would do that, and Yates went at it with a fury. The centerpiece was a large concrete pool with a beach of sand hauled up from the Texas coast with elaborate bathhouses, all in a glistening white. Still not satisfied, Yates built a large dance floor with a band shell to house the big bands brought in from back east. Louis Armstrong, Jack Teagarden, and Lawrence Welk, to mention a few. There was also a skating rink for those inclined, and the Yates Hotel and Scott Skidmore's Plantation Pavilion offered good food and drinks. Rankin prospered greatly, and there seemed to be no end to the possibilities for growth. Except, in October 1929, the stock market crashed and the Great Depression was fatal to Rankin Beach. Today, few remember this oasis of pleasure in the desert. It is hidden in the past. My friend Annie Gossett Hamilton, who grew up in Rankin, insisted nothing was left of the beach, not even the concrete pool, which she said had been demolished and filled in years ago. I doubted that something like a concrete swimming pool have disappeared without a trace. In my doubt, I asked if we might go to Rankin and visit the site. We did just that. Annie, her husband Dan, an old colleague of mine, and me. In Rankin, I was flattered and pleased to find the scholarly ladies had gathered a mass of printed material attesting to the reality of Rankin Beach. My doubts were beginning to dissolve, but being hard of head, I still wanted to see the site. Those present insisted nothing was there. One lady, however, said she thought she knew where something remained. So we drove some distance behind the hotel, and climbing a low berm, I look down to see Ira Yates Rankin Beach Pool, obscured in brush, somewhat trashed, but obviously intact. I had walked into another man's dream, and I knew I must do something about that. At the very least, a path could be cut through the brush to a cleaned-up pool with an exhibit created to describe the Rankin Beach and Ira Yates. It's a great story that would attract national attention. Rick Smith is a local news and community affairs columnist for the San Angelo Standard-Times.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard-Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.